This is Judith Leigh welcoming you to Manx Radio and to the podcast of this week's edition of At Your Service. Manx Radio. Caring for heritage buildings, a huge responsibility or an opportunity to be imaginative and even adventurous? That's what we're considering on today's programme, in the company of visitor Adrian Fox and local powerhouse Louise Whiteleg. And Manx Language Development Officer Ruth Keggin-Gell will be along later with an invitation to join her in Peel next Saturday. But first, let's have some music. The choir of Wells Cathedral and Blessed Are the Pure in Heart. Choir of Wells Cathedral and Blessed Are the Pure in Heart. Adrian Fox is the Environmental and Sustainability Officer for Cathedrals and Church Buildings in the Church of England, a recent visitor to the island who came to talk about the challenges of caring for church buildings in a way that's both effective and welcoming for those who use them and at the same time environmentally sensitive. Heating heritage buildings is never going to be easy, nor, I'd imagine, would one solution be appropriate for all buildings. So I was keen to ask Adrian if the advice is going to be different for every church or cathedral.
There are clearly very similar and very limited technologies that we can use, and every church is similar in one sense, but extremely different. So what are the needs of that particular building? And that is the key starting point for any heating approach, whether it be a domestic building or a church.
Now, it has been said that if it's really, really difficult to heat the building, if it's big and it's drafty and it's got a big high ceiling, then heat the person.
Yeah, that's a really valid and obvious strategy. We've got three or four strategies, which includes don't heat it at all. Remember, many of our buildings for generations have never been heated. But we can't choose a strategy today based on our current needs, based on what our ancestors did. But there are lots of lessons that we can learn from our ancestors. So yes, you're right, voluminous building. perfectly well maintained, no damage happening or deterioration to the heritage of that building or many artefacts within it. So why then heat it unnecessarily?
I have heard arguments for and against. First of all, you've got to have some kind of heating on at some point. You've got to keep the church warmish. Otherwise, it will deteriorate badly. The other side of the argument is it's better not to put any heating on at all. That won't injure the building.
Heating can be seen as a bit of a both a villain and a sticking plaster. So we can make things worse with heating, but equally we can make things better. But it's quite often a sticking plaster. So it's interesting that you mention we need heat to make something better because of the damp and it's cold. But why is it damp? We visited a church on the island. I won't mention it, so as we're not embarrassing anybody. As soon as I arrived, I noticed we arrived in rain, and I noticed the rain was coming off the roof. It was then overflowing the gutter. It was running down the downpipe. It was not going into the gully. It was coming across the tarmac and then was re-entering the building. And it just happened to be re-entering the building where the organ chamber is. So that room will be damp. So if we heat that space up, knowing that there is moisture going back into that building, warm air holds more moisture, so it holds more water. So when that building is intermittently heated and it cools down, that moisture has to stick to something, and it's usually the cold parts of an organ. They then run down and start to damage the different components within an organ, but equally that can apply to other heritage artefacts. Could be timber, could be wall paintings. So we need to step back and understand why it's damp and try and correct it. We often talk about fabric first. We're very good at looking at the modern, at the now, and people say these don't work in churches, they only work in modern houses. And in modern houses, we talk of fabric first. So we talk of insulation, triple glazing, double glazing, loft insulation. So we look to keep that heat inside by that fabric first phrase. For me, in a heritage building or our older traditional buildings, fabric first for me is just good maintenance. Make sure we have a watertight and dry building to start off with. Then we can start building from there, because money is better spent on that maintenance.
Do you think there's a big advantage of a stranger coming and looking at a building? Do you think possibly those who are familiar with the building don't see something that is quite straightforward and quite economical to put right, but we tend not to notice it because we're so familiar with the building?
Yes, I think that that's a really valid statement again. The third party unbiased view can help you step back a little bit and separate the facts from the feelings. There is another challenge in that we have post-1960s thinking where oil and gas was cheap. And you do not complain when your building is warm, you only complain when it's cold. So we have a heating system, and we can see in all the documents for modern buildings, very elevated temperatures to create comfort. So we sometimes are a little bit constricted by the modern thinking and the high temperature heating approach. And to heat a heritage building, an older building, an infrequently used building, which is what we're talking about here, we need to be able to take that and manipulate it to make it work in those buildings. And that's where we need to upskill, and we need to get our engineers and designers rethinking these approaches. The worst invention in my opinion, for heating engineers was the thermometer, because comfort is not about a number on a thermometer. So why do we need to say we need to heat this building to 21 degrees? Because it might be 21 degrees and damp and drafty, you will still feel uncomfortable. So what we need to do is move away from temperatures and move away to understanding what makes people feel warm or cold and comfortable or not. And we're all different.
So if a church asks you, come along and advise on what needs to be done, if you find that there's quite a long shopping list of things that need to be done, are the grants available? Because sometimes it could be quite major expense that maybe a church or even a cathedral really hasn't budgeted for. So how does it stack up financially, Adrian?
It comes back to priorities, and finances do feature in that priority and that needs assessment. So we may want to do the right thing, but actually, in the real world, it's very difficult to get there. So what we need to do is have a plan B and a C and a D and see when we bring those barriers in, like finances, it might be planning, it might be we can't get the capital cost, let alone the operating costs together. All of these things feature in our decision making. In terms of grants, yes, we've just seen Trianum 1 of the Net Zero programme. That's the Church Commissioners gave, I think it was about £30 million towards the first Trianum funding pot. The programme director, Julian Atkins and Shannon Carr-Sands, they manage that programme and they are managing the monies at, which has been separated across many portfolios, including schools, sea houses, housing, and churches and church halls and cathedrals. So this is phase one of that process to build the capacity and the knowledge and demonstrate it can be worked. So we're looking at demonstrator churches. Trianum 2 is about to start next year and there's a further funding bid. There's been some lessons learned from the last 3 years, so they will direct that funding to where it makes the biggest impact. So there will be more funding streams coming along.
Now, listening to this conversation, it could all sound very technical, factual, all to do about buildings. But at its heart, as Christian people, it's about good stewardship.
It is, yes. All five marks of mission link into this particular ambition. You know, the ambition wasn't just to do with climate change and global warming. We are seeing global crises across the world. We're seeing flooding, we're seeing wildfires, elevated temperatures. Some of the most extreme temperatures have happened in the last 10 years. There are climate sceptics and believe this is just part of a natural global warming process. But as Christians, as people of faith, can we genuinely sit back and do nothing and hope that that is the case? We honestly believe that God has given us a missional objective here, and we believe that we are called to spread this message and do what we can to try and help our neighbours across the world and everybody across the world.
Thank you, Adrian Fox, Environmental and Sustainability Officer for Cathedrals and Church Buildings in the Church of England. Adrian's visit to the island was organised by Louise Whiteleg as part of her new job, and she joins me now to tell us all about it and what it could mean for our local churches and the communities they serve. Good morning, Louise, and welcome.
Good morning, Judith. Lovely to be here. Thank you.
You are the Church Building Support Officer for the Anglican Church on the island. Now, this is a post that is funded by the Anglican Church across. It's part of their Buildings for Mission project.
It's brilliant, really, because what we're doing is we're taking it back to why we're a church. It's buildings for mission. So the question in the first place becomes what your mission is. And of course, a major part of our mission is care for creation. And we need to find what is the best way to heat our buildings, what's the most appropriate way for what we're doing in our churches, not just today, but also what we're hoping to do for tomorrow. So it was really timely we had this opportunity for Adrian Fox to come over, who is the church's main advisor on how to sympathetically heat our heritage buildings.
But as a Methodist local preacher, for you, Louise, this is more than just finding practical solutions to practical problems, isn't it?
We get so busy in organising that sometimes we forget exactly why we're doing this. And I thought, what are we here for? What are we pulling everyone together for? So I actually quoted from Colossians 1, 15 to 16. The Son is the image of the invisible God, the firstborn over all creation. For in him all things were created, things in heaven and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or powers or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. And for me, that's really where it starts. When we dwell in that passage and we think that Christ is the divine manifestation of God's divine nature, the glory and the substance that makes God visible and evident to us. And it's those things that we stumble across every single day that remind us of God's glory and God's splendour and his involvement in everything that we do. So when we worship together in our church buildings, those buildings are so much more than just a venue to meet. Those buildings are a way of us expressing our commitment to the safeguarding of God's kingdom. We want our buildings to be of use and to be of service and to be relevant. We want our buildings to be a platform for our mission. At the moment, the Anglican Church has a target of being carbon net zero by 2030. And that seems like a high and lofty ambition. But actually, it's a call to action. It's a call and a charge to think about who we are as churches, what our mission is, but what is our very essence. And it's about the church not being passive, and simply it's not enough to not do harm. We should aspire, must aspire, to be protectors and be active in our protection. So when we're looking at how our buildings interact with the wider environment around us, we want buildings that are fit for our purpose, but we also want buildings that can showcase a lot of the new technology, the emergent technology that helps us to be sympathetic to God's glorious creation.
It's a circle, isn't it, Louise? The one thing leads naturally into the other. But the thing that touches me very deeply about what you say is that at the heart of this is not saying what kind of a central heating boiler am I using, but what is my purpose for being here?
Absolutely. It is. I often think of the infinity sign where everything comes back to the centre, and we go out and we come back to the centre. And I think when we're managing our buildings, and this goes for your house that you're sat in at the moment listening to the radio programme on, it goes for your work buildings, it goes for anywhere we go and interact. We walk into a problem, and the problem may be the boiler's old. The problem may be there's damp in the corner. The problem may be the roof is leaking. And we come in and we look at that one problem. But actually, we want to be looking at things in the whole and in the round.
But the next stage, of course, is cost. Now, your role is funded centrally by the Church of England. What kind of grants are available for people who see a problem that they can do a temporary fix, but it maybe needs something bigger for a proper long-term solution?
That's the million-dollar question that everybody's interested in. And you would have thought, being a Yorkshire lady, that might be the first question that I'd ask as well. My first port of call always is make sure we spend the money right and make sure we spend the money once. So the first thing before we even think about the money is making sure we've identified the correct solution for the problem. Not the quick, easy fix, but the right solution. The Church of England has triennium funding, so it comes out in batches of years. And we're actually just arriving at the end of that triennium of funding, and we're just awaiting before the new news of the grants arrives. But what that does is that gives opportunity to stop and think what is needed in that building. But of course, how do you answer the question of what is needed in that building unless you know what your mission is for that building? So actually, the first question isn't where the funding's coming from.
Is part of your role, Louise, to help people to look at what their mission is and what they need practically to support that mission?
I think my role in a nutshell is to walk alongside people and signpost where they need extra help, extra information, or simply just to be a soundboard to test out ideas and to maybe guide in how to look at a bigger project. When you walk into your regular place of worship, you can become blind. So I think my role is a bit of an optician. I can help to provide a different lens to see the same premises through, and hopefully that will help as part of your working team bring in fresh ideas and hopefully maybe even solutions. I'm just going to take this back to where we first started, and again, it's rooting things back in God. So we were thinking about the Colossians passage, and when we believe as a church that all things have been created by him, it's that enduring spirit that holds all things together. It's a unifying power for us as an island, us as a church, us as a church family, across the board ecumenically, we're all here as churches on the island. And we're here to commune with the glories of creation. And when we do that, we commune with God. And again, it's having those buildings that are fit for our mission as disciples of Christ on the island.
Thank you, Louise Whiteleg, the Anglican Church Building Support Officer on the island, supporting buildings and the people who care for them to grow in their mission to serve their local communities and the wider world. And if you'd like to contact Louise to have a chat or arrange a visit, her number is, as always, 474275. 474275. And now it's nearly notice board time. But first, let's welcome Manx Language Development Officer Ruth Kegan-Gell with an invitation to two workshops that she's running in Peel next weekend.
Maramai Jude and Maramai lovely listeners of At Your Service. Ruth Kegan-Gell, Manx Language Development Officer at Culture Vannan here, and I just wanted to pop on and tell you about two workshops that I'll be running at Thai the Vay Retreat House in Peel on Saturday the 25th of October. There'll be a morning session which is exploring Manx for worship, and that takes place between 9:30 a.m. and 12:30 p.m. And over the course of those 3 hours, we'll have lots of fun in an interactive workshop exploring short prayers, blessings and phrases that we can intentionally weave into our worship. You do not have to be a member of the clergy to attend this workshop. Everybody is welcome. In the afternoon, between 2 and 4 p.m., there'll be a Manx Taizé chant workshop where Taizé chants have been translated into Manx by myself and other Manx speaker and teacher, Paul Rogers. And I'm going to teach you over the course of 2 hours some beautiful Manx Taizé chants. So if you would like to join on either or both of those workshops, please get in touch with me. You can do so by emailing manxlanguage@culturevannan.im. That's manxlanguage@culturevannan.im, or by giving me a phone call, 676 169. That's 676 169. Hope to see you there. Gura mai au. Thank you.
Money and charm.
Thank you, Ruth. And this is one of the Taizé chants translated into Manx that Ruth taught in a previous workshop, Bani Nchan Ma'anam, Bless the Lord My Soul. The retreat house, Taida Vey, is probably best known as Balawattleworth House on Tynwald Road in Peel, and they'll be offering a simple lunch next Saturday, open to everyone, but ideal if you're planning to do both the workshops. If you'd like lunch, just let Ruth know when you make your booking. As Ruth said, the workshops are completely free, but there's a suggested donation of £8 to Taida Vey to help with the cost of lunch, and that can be paid by cash or card on the day. And now let's take a look at some more news on this week's notice board. This afternoon there'll be a special service for all our beloved pets. That's in Kirkmackled, Mackled Parish Church, this afternoon at 2:30. All creatures great and small and their humans will be made very welcome. Ballyfesson Methodist Chapel in Port Erin invite you to join them as they celebrate a family harvest this afternoon at 3:00. Jen Casson will lead the service and there'll be a surprise appearance by the Laxey Puppets, and of course there'll be refreshments in the hall afterwards. This evening, the Mariners' Choir will be in St John's Methodist Church for a service starting at the usual time of 6:30. Reverend Joanna Smart will preach and there'll be supper and community hymn singing to follow. Also this evening, harvest celebrations begin at the Howe Chapel with a service this evening at 6:30, which will be led by Reverend Dr. Janet Corlett. Harvest celebrations continue at the Howe tomorrow evening, Monday the 20th, when there'll be a sale of fruit at 7 p.m, followed at 7:30 by a concert by the Londoo Male Voice Choir. There's a suggested donation of £10 per person to include a harvest supper. The Methodist Church in Sulby are hosting a family event for half term, and it starts next Saturday the 25th. It's the Scarecrow Festival and Trail all around Sulby Village and the Pumpkin Patch Parable, all hosted by Sulby Methodist Church. That's the one at the crossroads in Sulby Village. And Sulby Methodist Church is going to be the Scarecrow Festival headquarters, and it'll be open on Saturday the 25th, Monday the 27th, Tuesday the 28th and Wednesday the 29th of October, daily from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m, with shorter opening hours on Sunday the 26th from 1 p.m. to 3 p.m. Purchase your trail guide at £5 per child in the church during those opening hours. As well as the trail guide, which is essential as you set off round the village and down the railway line to find the scarecrows, you can also join in colouring, crafts, decorating a biscuit, enjoy story time and refreshments at the trail headquarters each day. You'll also get an I've Been on the Scarecrow Trail sticker and a knitted pumpkin. Children, please, must bring along an adult with them. And to keep everyone powered up, there'll be hot and cold drinks, sandwiches and cakes available every day at the trail headquarters. Sulby Methodist Church is fully accessible for prams and wheelchairs, and there's an accessible toilet. This is going to be a great few days, open to everyone, fun, fresh air, exercise and quality time together. And finally, next Sunday, October the 26th, it's harvest time in Abilands Chapel. They'll have a service next Sunday afternoon at 3:00, led by Reverend Rebecca Ingruel, with refreshments served afterwards. And then, next Monday, the 27th, at 7 p.m, there'll be a short harvest service at Abilands Chapel, followed by the sale of produce and supper, and everyone will be made very welcome. And that's all that we have time for now, but I'll be back tonight at 9:00 with Sundown, your invitation to join me in our virtual lounge for late night easy listening with your requests and dedications. And I'd love you to join me if you can. And so, until whenever we meet again, this is Judith saying thank you for listening, and I wish you and those you love a blessed and peaceful week and a very good morning. Station.